Where does the clogging take place?
Right now, it's taken place at the gal's house that teaches us. And she lives, I think, at Fruitdale Lane, Donnell, and Steve Wilson. Anyway, it's right by the park. But before that, it was where they... It was back in the alley behind Hair Gallery, where they have square dance and round dancing there. We have it there in the winter time. In the summer, then we have a different place.
What made you want to get started on clogging?
I had a friend that was doing it, and she do clogging, and then she talked me into it. And after I got into it, well, I just enjoyed the country music and stuff. And later she got out, and I'm still going. So
good.
But anyway, it's just the front, you know, because if they weren't friendly, then I wouldn't go. Because sometimes I go to, many times, I go to something, and then I would even say anything to anyone. If they don't talk, I don't talk. But then as I've gotten older, then I've gotten away from it. And because I know my daughter, when she was going to school, she had said, "Mom, why don't you sit and talk with the ladies?" And so I said, "I'm okay." And so part of this, I guess, was coming from the South. You know, when you're in Rome, you do as the Romans do. And so you're in the South, you're a different ball game then. I don't know how it is now, because that's a lot of years ago. But then pretty soon, you know, people start talking, you start talking back, and you find it's easy, you know. We're on neutral ground, you know, if you don't want to talk. And then if you talk to someone, you could tell whether, and if they talk back, or you just, you know. So anyway,
Were you concluding then, I guess you were, that if a white man or woman didn't talk to you, that probably meant that he or she didn't want to have anything to do with black people?
Well, if they, I guess living in the South, if people talked to me, then I would talk. If they didn't, I wouldn't start a conversation. But now,
But is that like knowing your place?
Well, maybe. Because then... Well, maybe. Because I know when I first came here, my husband had these friends, white friends at Union. We'd go out there to visit. And, you know, he was talking his head off. As they talked to me, I would talk to them.
Yes.
So then, and so, you see, everybody's different, because then I had this other black friend, Marion. Well, she just talked to everybody. And so then, once they were discussing me, and then she said, "Well, Dorothy doesn't talk that much." So Marion said, "Well, once she get to know you, you know, she will." Mm-hmm. And so that's what happened. Mm-hmm. Once you get to know that people are friendly, and so, and sometimes you just play it safe. You just
sure.
You go a place, sit where you feel comfortable, because maybe might be a group of Japanese over there, mm-hmm. and you might feel like, "Well, I sit over here." Might be a group of blacks sitting there, and I might not sit by them, but if I saw somebody my age, you know, then I'd probably sit by them, you know?
Sure. Uh-huh. Let's come back to the school arrangements for a minute. After all of your children went to Greenwood, and then they all went to LeGrand High School, I suppose.
Right, uh-huh.
Was there a junior high school or a middle school
that they went to
in the meantime?
Junior high. Junior high. Mm-hmm. Uh-huh.
And that was... What building was that?
They've torn down the junior high building that they went to.
Was it previously called the Central School, located where the middle school is now?
All I know, it was junior high, and it was on 4th Street. You'd walk right in to go to that building, and that building is not there anymore. Well, I think they have that hot house there. They have that hot house, and there. And so
A hothouse, you mean a greenhouse?
A greenhouse, okay, greenhouse. Yes. Because it was a building there where the kids used to go in. And so they have, what is that, middle school on the other corner over there. And see, they didn't have that there. But anyway, where the kids go in, it's not there anymore. They walk up that little step and go and walk into the building. Okay. And it was, I guess, ups, they have steps on in the building.
So, how did your children, well, I suppose it varied with the child, but how did they fare in junior high and senior high?
Let's see, each one was different. So then it seemed like with the boys, they always had friends, and they'd be with their friends. But then when it comes to girls, you know, boys and girls like each other, then there was sort of a boundary there, you know, white, and there they, with their, you know, parents, then, you know, they get on the phone and they call and like this, but then it was always there. So, and then with the girls, my oldest daughter, she went to Greenwood School, then she went to junior high there, and she was into 4-H and things, and then she was up to junior high. She was with, I think, Future Homemakers, I think that was. And this, the teacher's husband was the manager at Payless. Dietrich? Something there. Now, it's two people. But anyway, he was Gene. Did you know him, Gene?
Well, I've heard the name.
Okay. Okay, but was his wife was the homemade teacher. And so, with my daughter, she was, usually the girls, they friended, they sew and have competition and all of that. And it didn't seem to be any problem there. She was just all outgoing, and she'd spend the night with some of the girls, and the girls would spend the night with her. But in some cases, it was a difference, because my niece, I guess she that lived next door, Theo's daughter, she'd spend the night, I think, with Vanderbilt, I guess it was, and they lived out in the country somewhere there. And this girl would come spend the night with her. And then, yet there was another girl my niece was telling me about. She said, I think she was Seventh-day Adventist, and her parent had different ideas, you know, about associating, you know, being too close with with the black, and what the people would say. And some would say, well, because I know with one of the girls, my daughter was, and she was in cheerleading, started at Greenwood, and she said that if my daughter got some part of this, that she couldn't be in it, and that her mom had told her, anytime she want to come at your house, it's fine, but you can't go to her house, and because it didn't mean anything to Jackie, my daughter, because she was telling me about this. But it did me, you know, because I knew where she was coming from and my daughter didn't. And so I still remember it today, because later I was talking to my daughter about it. She didn't remember anything, so that's the way it was. It just went over the top of her head.
Well, how did it make you feel at that time?
Well, just like it did when she started the school, that all the kids, all the parents don't feel this way. And so I know it's there, you know, because history, you know.
Yes.
You know, so you can't deny, you know, that it wasn't there. And
have you gotten to the point where you simply accept that that is the way some people feel?
Well, sure. And they can't help the way they feel, like I can't help the way I feel. Well, maybe some things I, you know, could, you know, learn about that. But anyway, that's still my feeling. So if I don't like somebody, you can't make me, you know, I'll treat them nice, but that's all you can do, just treat them nice. Yeah, I can't make them like me, and they, you know, sometimes something do happen to change that person, but then I can't do that.
Is resentment a part of your feeling?
No, I don't feel like I have resentment about, right now, about anybody, you know.
You seem very accepting.
Yeah, well, you know, because like a survival or something, you go around it, you know, there, and you don't like everything, you know, to go on, and that some things you don't have to, if a few years not going to make any difference whether that change or not, so you say, well, big deal. But everybody, you know, don't feel the same. They see a lot of things that they...
Has your son, who's the brakeman, talked about any kind of discrimination he's experienced on the job?
No. No, really, he's not a talker either, so really he doesn't... But he did talk to his daughter to let her know, because he married, my son Doug married a white woman. They have her daughter. And so he just was letting her know about life, you know. And that everyone's not going to feel the same. And so that's what you do. You just educate them on that so they won't be shocked. So if it happens, okay, don't you just go another avenue.
Yeah.
And so you don't want everybody to be so naive, they don't know what's going on there.
Is the white woman that he married from LeGrand?
No, she lived at Salem. They're not together now. They were together about 17 years. She still lives here, of course, there. But she was from Salem.
Does he live here also?
Yes.
Did he remarry?
No, and neither did she. They had a couple of kids. So they still live here.
When the boys were in high school, did they participate in athletics?
Yes. Anyway, I guess the first was sort of like Lily ball, and then they were in
baseball,
track.
Mm-hmm.
And track, and football, and basketball.
Were they good at all those activities?
Well, not necessarily good, but they were in there.
And they were on the teams.
Yes, they were on the teams. Yeah. And I think with Doug, he made varsity, and maybe Doug and David did, maybe. So they, you know, they took part in sports because they liked, you know, activities.
How did they do academically? Variable?
Yeah. Because Doug went to Western Oregon, Monmouth. That's where he went to school. He graduated from there.
With a BA?
Possibly.
If he graduated from college, it was a BA, I suppose.
A what?
A BA, bachelor's degree.
I said possibly a BA, because he was into recreation or something like that. Recreation, coaching or something. Because he never did really, he was offered a job in math and he would take it. I think if it was at the Dales or somewhere.
Teaching?
Teaching math. And he wouldn't take it. And they, the people knew him because they had gone to school with him. And they agreed to help him, but he wouldn't take it because he said, I don't know math. And I'm not going to go in there. And so he didn't. And so really all he did was student teach. And so what he did, he on the railroad. And he's still on the railroad. And then after a while, you don't go back to school, then you are not eligible to, I think you call it student teacher.
Yes, that's right.
Substitute teaching. And so he went, and my son Arthur, he went to Easton just for a little while, and he dropped out. David didn't go because he was going to go to Walla Walla. And really, I guess most of the play ball. And so he was there one day and decided he didn't want to go. And so, but my oldest son went to Oregon State. Then later he got into ROTC. So he just retired from the military.
Oh.
So he is still in Kansas, Leavenworth, Kansas, where he retired from. He's still there.
Did he become an officer?
Well, yes, he went in as an officer.
I see.
And so then, but then he, after so many years, I guess you, I think you say you either go up or you go out, because they didn't need him, so that was what he did, because he, you know, put all those years in there. So he was, you know, a major there. That was the route he took, you know, mm-hmm. military. And so he, and then one of my daughter, she just got her bachelor's degree, just in June. And so she had been, she was into nursing. And so she'd been working to the veteran hospital, seemed like 15 years. So anyway, she'd been there a long time, working veteran hospital, so she decided she was going to go further, and she said she hoped that she could get a master's in this. So she lives in Seattle. In fact, I have three that lives in that area. David lives there. He drives the bus to the, what is it, Metro or whatever the bus company is.
Mm-hmm. It's called Metro.
He drives bus there, and my daughter worked at Veteran Hospital. I have another daughter lives at Renton. She worked at Boeing for about 20 years. So she got laid off just, I think, December. So now she's going at Bellevue, I guess. This is what they do when they lay you off. They sort of give you something to help you retrain you.
Hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Has reading been an activity you've enjoyed?
Sort of.
Do you read The Observer?
Oh yeah, I take that, read that.
Read
and then I read
magazines?
Yeah, Reader's Digest, mm-hmm. and Guidepost, mm-hmm. and I can get that in the big print, which makes it better.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So.
So your eyes keep you from reading comfortably?
Well, I think they're going to be better because I just had cataract surgery like a couple of weeks ago.
Oh.
And then next week I'm having the other eye done.
I see.
Uh-huh, so.
That should help a great deal.
Yes.
Yes.
So, I don't know how many years ago it was that I got my GED. I guess I started in 85, 86. Anyway, I got that and because I was thinking after my husband died that I'm going to have to get a job.
Mm-hmm.
So my daughter said, well, you don't have a high school education. I said, and you're going to have it. And I just figured that I could, she had worked at a telephone company here. At that time, we, you know, they had a switchboard and all of that. But since then, we don't have it here. And so then I thought, well, I'll get my GED. And so I did get it, but then I really didn't go after a job.
Mm-hmm.
And so after I got my GED, then this friend talked to me and said, hey, let's sign up for a class at the college. After you're 65, you can take this learning without, you know, you won't get any credits. You don't have to have any credits. And so that was what I did. That was what I sort of think, well, I'll take improving the vocabulary, reading improvement, and also writing. And I knew I shouldn't have been in the writing class, but anyway, that seemed like the easiest, and so that was what I took. And to me, it was just a fun thing, you know. My husband had gone, and the kids are gone,
mm-hmm.
so that I just sit here and, you know, after I finish the, you know, with the GED, you know, because if they have a place here, you can go and you know, get his GED.
Tell me a little more about that process.
The GED?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, well, at the time I went to the GED, they had it up here at the Joseph Building. Mm-hmm. And so the first time I went in there, they give you a little book, you know, to check so they know where to place you. And I saw all this stuff, like fractions. And I remember this is what they were doing when I left high school, because I went as far as, went to the eighth grade is where I went in school.
Mm-hmm.
And then after looking at that, I thought, some of this I don't even remember. And so I thought, well, I don't have to do this. I could just take this paper back up there and walk out. And I thought about it for a long time. I said, I don't have to do this. But anyway, I did it.
Were you a little afraid?
Yes.
Yeah.
I don't have to do this. You know, I don't have to study. I don't have to do this. Just go home and not worry about this. You know.
I bet part of it was, and I don't think I'll be able to do it either. Was that part of what you were thinking?
Well, I don't know. Because I just remember having that in school. That's what we were doing in school, these fractions there. But anyway, I went ahead with it and got the little book. And she said, well, you take it home and then work on, do what you can. And then you bring it back and then we'll work from there. And so that was what I did. And we worked a while. And then on Channel 13, they had a broadcast that came on concerning the GED. And so I saw that a few days and said, if you're having problems, call this number. So see, with this class, you have to read sometimes 10 or 15 pages, be ready for the next day. And then they had this math, and I wasn't getting that. It was simple, but I wasn't getting it. So then I called this number. And when I called this number, then they connected me up with a person that would help me with this. And so after I got acquainted with her, we've been friends ever since then. So then I did get a GED. And then on top of that, she was a volunteer for the LABA method of reading. And so we went that route. And then the phonics and all that. And because for me, I didn't know anything about the phonics. And so I just got to studying. And so I'd go to this gal's house 2 hours. We go twice a week. First was 1 hour. And so, anyway, I got through with that. So that was when she suggested, why don't we take this class? At that time, I wasn't 65. And I said, well, I won't be 65 till next year. And so I jumped into that. And to me, it was just, I didn't have, you know, my hair alone. So then nothing keeps me from studying. I could sleep all day and study all night if I wanted to. So, anyway, after getting that, because I guess some of the teachers, they said, well, really, we don't know where to place you when we were with some of this group there, she said, because you know this, but you don't know this, so you fell through the cracks somewhere. So, anyway, I went along with them until I got this other person that was, you know, the tutor that helped me. And then
that was a better arrangement for you.
Well, yes, it was, really.
Sure.
Uh-huh. Yeah, so that we had, if I didn't understand, I just asked, well, show me this. What do you do?
Mm-hmm.
And then, like on the TV, to be able to read that many pages and be ready the next day, that's much.
The GED includes some.
I'm going to turn that off. That's I hear my bell. Okay.
The GED includes some science and history subjects, doesn't it?
Yes. Yep.
How did you make out with those?
Well, I passed it.
Mm-hmm.
I passed it because then we had to go to Island City, that place where they had it in GED,
mm-hmm.
and then to test me. I don't know whether I was there 2 or 3 times, because I don't know whether they had the math at one time and but anyway, I passed and got a certificate there, and someone was telling me, so you know, it's good you got it then, because they've added something else to it. You would have to write a paper, you know. And so I guess if I had to write a paper, I would have got something up and wrote the paper.
Now that reminds me to ask about this computer you have over here. Mm-hmm. Why do you have a computer?
My daughter gave it to me.
Uh-huh.
The ones in Seattle.
Do you use it?
I'm learning.
To write letters or what?
Email.
Yeah.
I'm gonna email her. Because she got it at Boeing. They were, I think she said they, whatever they do with, delete them or whatever.
Upgrade.
Or something. Yes. Bad. They had all these and they were selling them at a price. So she said, nothing was in it. She said, I put the guts in it and everything. So she brought it from Seattle and set it up. And she said, when you learn this, then I'll put another unit in it. So anyway, she showed me a few things. And so then when my son was here, he took it down, took it apart, and said, this is the motherboard, and this is... Because I think, now, why is he telling me all this stuff? I don't need to know that.
Yes.
But anyway, he said, but it doesn't have a modem in it. And I didn't know what that was. He said, so you have to have a modem in it before you can send email. And so anyway, he said, next time I'm here, because he still have to come at Fort Lewis, you know, with his job that he still is in. He said, I'll bring one. So he put it in there. And so my son and my friend's been, you know, helping me to, you know, send email and do stuff like that. A lot of other stuff on there, but I just say, well, wait a minute. Let me learn this first. Because they got all this information they know and want to show me. I said, well, not yet. Yeah.
Are you at the point where you feel confident in using the computer?
Yeah, with what I know. Mm-hmm. You know, because I, you know, learned how to type a little on my own with the high school book, you know, mm-hmm. and just like that. So really, I pick, you know, to get the, you know, and so I have a dictionary handy for spelling there, and because it also has a spell check, but then when I send them a letter, I said, don't be telling me I spelled the word wrong now. Just take it. So I guess it's been since June that he had the modem in it there.
Right.
And yeah, so it, son's been coming over because he has one. And the other friend, which was my tutor, she has one. And they, you know, will update you with all this information.
Is this a way of perhaps feeling less lonely?
Well,
or maybe you don't ever feel lonely.
But there are different feelings, you know, a person have when, there's different feelings. Because like with my schedule on Mondays at 9 o'clock, I'm at the bowling alley for a couple of hours. And then about 2:30, I'm at the water aerobic. And I come in and eat a snack and then I go to work. And if it's on a Monday, then I go practice clogging. And then on Tuesday, I've been playing tennis maybe from 8 till 10. And then still go to water aerobics and still got to go to work. And so even sometimes you do that, you'd be glad when you say, well, somebody have a cancellation. So, you know, and then there, you know, I go to the nursing home. I have an older friend up there go and sometimes feed her and whosoever's sitting next to her. And so really, I guess it's not not too much loneliness.
That's apparently not.
No. Sometimes you'd be glad when people don't call you. You say, well, just sit here and eat, and then you watch TV, and you wake up. You go to sleep.
How did you happen to meet Gerda Broughton?
In a meeting, in some meetings, because it some years ago they had, when I say they, it was a group of women that was starting classes, and I saw I knew some of the women, and that seemed like it might have stemmed from the mental health clinic or something there, some of these, because I think Donna San, she did some, and also some of the other women, they was counseling doing things. So then I got involved by going to some of the meetings, and then they had we had a group called Omegles, I think that's what it was, or they helping the chronically ill or something like that. They'd come once a week. And so anyway, these different people at the meeting, Donald Sand, Maurice Yarnes, and Brownton, and because her father-in-law, I think it was, because her husband, you know, was a lawyer, a judge, too. Yeah, so, you read about these people in the neighborhood and what they're doing and out of this. Because I remember one particular meeting we were in, and we were talking about if you could go any place in the world, where would you want to go? And I was trying to think of a place. And I know, I don't know whether she said skiing or something she said. I don't know whether she said the Alps or where. But it seemed like I would be comfortable going somewhere if I knew someone. But she didn't have to know someone to go there. And I thought, wow, people are just different. You know, and so I just remember that even to today, you know, that I'm just trying to think of if you could call anyone in the world. So those were some of the exercises they were doing in these meetings. And I guess I sort of started going because I think I had one or two kids that was into marijuana or drugs or something like that. And so, and by you reaching out for help, you know, when you got these things. And so that was the group I was reaching to, and so we beat all these different people. Because I guess before that, I didn't know Donna Sand.
Speaking of wanting to travel somewhere, has it ever been part of your desire to return to Alabama or Florida for a visit?
No. Let's see, I was born in Georgia, then later moved to Florida, and I guess I did go back. I took my son, after I was married and had a son, I took him when he was about 10, before he was a year old. I went there because my mother was there and visited. And usually, and then I had a grandmother that was in Jacksonville, Florida. And so my grandmother came here because her daughter was here. And a lot of other people, they die off, you know. And then the people, the young people, you know, they were young, they got husbands, and, you know, and so that interest is not there. Because I had a brother who lived in Tampa, Florida, and then he came, my sister came here. So then the close. So no, I wouldn't, I don't know, no, I would be interested in, you know, anybody back there right now.
Do you remember any particular reaction to returning to the South? Did it seem much the same as when you had left?
Really, I don't know, because when I went there, I went by train. You know, you're there on the train, I guess. Seemed like I did go back where I went when my brother was there. We did fly there. But usually, if you ever live there, you know the customs there, so you just go by the customs there. You know the bus station, the big sign is that color, and you know that's where you're going to look for. So you see all the colored people there, so that's where you go. So you need to go blundering in another one and say, what's wrong with you?
And that's the way it was when you came back to visit.
Yeah, I'm quite sure it was colored when I went back by train.
That was still the 1940s, wasn't it?
Yeah, because my name was born in 40, so that would have been about 40, 9, mm-hmm. 49 or 50 or something, and changed that much.
The South started changing in the 60s.
Uh-huh. Yeah, well, 60s. I went to, let's see, I went to Tampa, Florida, I think, and I guess, I don't know what year I went there. My mom and I went to see my brother because my brother had a nervous breakdown, so we went to camp and we flew there. And some of his friends picked us up. And so we stayed at a friend's house. And so usually when you go there, you stay around with people
sure.
you know.
Sure.
Uh-huh. And they, if ever they drive you or take you, you know, mm-hmm. they're going to take you where you need to go. Uh-huh.
Later in the 60s, when you heard or read about Rosa Parks, for example, uh-huh. how did you have any reaction to what she did?
Well, I guess not, because living back there, that I do know that the sign's there, you know, the color to the rear.
Yeah.
And so you go there, and that's where you sit.
Yeah, but she said, or she decided she wasn't going to go by that.
She was tired,
Yeah.
And so sometimes that can happen. You just said, well, the heck with it. If whatever happened, happened. And you just, you know, and because for people, the trailblazers or whatever you call the pioneers, sometimes some people have to be talked into it, and mm-hmm. some just said, well, I worked all day, and I'm going to sit here, because you could be sometime on the, not only the rear seat, the other seats, you know, the other, there's a long seat in the bus, mm-hmm. and then there's the one next to it.
Sure.
And so there, but if they're taken, then you stand. And so, one person, like in that case, one person did make a difference. But then, everyone don't think like she did. Mm-hmm.
Uh-huh. And from what you've said, I guess if you had been living in the South all the time, you wouldn't have done what she did.
I probably wouldn't have.
Mm-hmm.
Uh-huh.
But do you think it's a good thing that she did do what
well,
she did?
Well, yes. It did. So
because it did make a difference.
It did make a difference. It
made things better on the whole, would you say?
Well, sure. Sure, because after that, that was, you know, just reading about a lot of things there that gave people the courage to stand.
That's exactly it.
Uh-huh.
Yes.
And so, and like you said, sometimes it might cost something.
Mm-hmm.
And many times, like when they, you know, decide to boycott, you know, and since they couldn't ride as first-class citizens, let's carpool to do something different. And like with a lot of people, sometimes if it's going to hurt you, and you working for someone, then you try as long as you can is not to take part in it, you know, because you need that job.
Mm-hmm. Don't rock the boat.
Yeah, right, don't rock the boat. And so people take that stand sometimes.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. So, and so really in some cases it's survival. And there are some who say, I'm not going to have any part of it. There are some people that think, well, it's just me and my wife and I don't want to get hurt, and so they take mm-hmm. the mother out.
Mm-hmm.
And people like that now.
Sure.
Yeah, uh-huh.
Sure.
They say, well, you go home, you go along. So, even like sitting in the, you know, at the counters there. And so, by doing that now, then the people see that everybody is, you know, not alike, you know, and like you said, well, I don't want to. They are troublemakers. There are some, so that could be troublemakers in every corner. And so you have to decide, make a decision. Well, everybody's not alike because you might meet someone who says, I didn't know they were like that. And so, so you don't even take a chance. Same thing with me.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. But I can't say everybody's like that and neither can you.
Yeah. Uh-huh. You expect to live the rest of your life in La Grande?
Let's see. Probably.
What would make you want to go elsewhere?
I don't know. I don't know. I guess because I've been, you know, content here, and because I know my nephew had said, you know, when my husband died, why don't you leave the Grand, come to Seattle, and sell that place as, you're getting a place in Seattle. And so, I mean, I listened to him talk, because he'd been saying that for years, ever since he went to Seattle, because he'd live here, Robert Terry. And so he got a job teaching, so he moved there. And so he was saying, well, you ought to get those kids out of the Grand ever since you've been there. Anyway.
I'm going to interview him on Saturday this week.
Uh-huh. Yeah. Well, each person have a different point of view.
Nothing he said persuaded you.
Well, no. I guess I was just content here because one of the youngsters had said to me, Elsa, my daughter was living in Portland. She says, I thought you had moved to Portland, Jackie. I says, no. I said, it's a good thing. I said, because Jackie is not in Portland anymore. I said, her husband is in the military, so she's not even there anymore. So, anyway, I'm still here, and I guess since my son been to Kansas, I've visited from there. And when he was in Germany, I visited there and stayed about a month. That was after my husband died. And then, since then, I went on a tour, and I would need to go another time to really enjoy what's there. Mm-hmm. But then I'm not, dying to go to any place, because they showed you all these tombs and these cathedrals and all of that, and these people, and so I thought, that's interesting too. But then, whenever you go on a group like that, that's what they key in on. Because a lot of people, I guess, are interested in that.
Where is Lucky buried?
Out in Island City.
Why there?
I don't know. He had, I think he had gotten 5 plots there because he buried his mother there and his brother and his sister too. So really, so then naturally you, where you have the ground, you just enter them there.
Is your mother there?
Yes, my mother's there mm-hmm. too.
And you said your grandmother was here too.
Yeah,
did she die here?
Yeah, my brother, yes. Uh-huh, they, mm-hmm. there too at Island City.
Are they all together and
no,
the same place?
No, my mom and some of the other people is on one side of the road, and then so they don't have a special for the black and for the white.
Yeah,
it's just
yeah.
as they, because my husband had bought this years ago, because mm-hmm. while he had talked once about to really invest in it where it'd have a whole plot where everyone, mm-hmm. but then it made sense to him, but it didn't to me. Yeah.
Is that where you expect to be buried?
Well, I guess. Not unless they have some other idea about cremating me or put my ashes somewhere.
Oh, you don't have a preference?
Well, anyway, I don't think about it. Whatever. I haven't told them what to do yet, and I should have. Yeah.